Good afternoon, Cape Cod and the islands. Welcome back. Episode 73 of the Cape Pod Sportscast, your host, Wesley Sykes. And I'm lined up with a very great, very interesting interview. Maybe the most interesting man on Cape Cod here. I'm talking to Bourne Athletic Director Scott Ashworth. Scott, how are you today?
Good, thanks. Thanks for having me on, Wes. Before we get started, I'd just like to thank you for the coverage that you give our kids down this end of the Cape.
Well, thank you very much.
You show the importance of athletics, and without you, I think we might fly under the radar a little bit.
Well, I appreciate that. I always love being buttered up before the interview here, so no hardball questions coming your way now. All those are off the table now. But yeah, so this is the start, the first week of the fall sports year 2019 for you. What does it mean as we'll jump right into it here? What does it mean to enter a new fall sports year as an athletic director?
Well, it's a pretty exciting time. You get out of the summer. You know, by the time the third week in July hits, I'm all set with camps and umpiring. I want to see some kids, and I want to see them out on our fields. So it's a great way, for me, it's a great way to start the new school year.
Yeah, and I think, as we open up, I mean, Bourne, I think, is coming off a pretty strong athletic year across the board. When I think of boys and girls hockey, I think of the girls volleyball winning the state title. You have the football team getting into the playoffs for the first time. It's 2012, 2011,
right.
Something around that landmark now. So I think there's a lot of promise coming around the Canalmen this year. And maybe if you could... maybe not show so much bias, but what's your expectation for the fall sports season for the Bourne Canalmen?
Well, I think we've prided ourselves on doing more with less.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we only have about 470 kids in the building, but we have a very high percentage of the students participating, and athletics mean something here.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of pride that goes in. I see people, that I had in the 90s, they're still coming back and watching games. I don't want to date myself, but some of their kids are now involved in the athletic programs. So this is my 10th year now as the athletic director, 28th year being in the Bourne School District.
Sure, yeah.
And, I like it as much now as I did in 1992 when I started.
Yeah, I think what kind of stands out about that, I mean, when you have, people that come to mind, the Sean Donovans, the Tom Grady's of the world, former student athletes who come back and now coach for you, I think that's a great indictment of the school and the atmosphere that's kind of created around the athletic programs. Right?
Yeah, I mean, just little things. I went to a wedding from a former player this weekend.
Oh, I saw that online, yeah.
The biggest kick out of was the groom, captain, the best man was the co-captain with them mm-hmm. when they graduated. So that was a lot of fun. But we have a lot of people that come give back. I think our Purple Pride supporter, Anne-Marie Strode,
mm-hmm.
I mean, she went to school here in the 80s. She's back teaching history, and, she's at every game. Really instrumental in pep rallies and school pride, and we got our Canalmen figurine out here.
Right,
that
yeah.
Actually, was a tree at one point.
Oh, yeah.
Got a wood carver
right.
to make up. So I think we have a pretty good thing going.
Yeah, and I think you touched on this a couple minutes ago when you said about less than 500 kids in the school, a good amount, participate in athletics at Bourne High here. But in your opinion, how beneficial is it for student athletes to participate in multiple sports, and particularly with a smaller school as yourself?
Well, in our school, it's like 100% necessary that we mm-hmm. don't have the specialization. And me as a parent of a collegiate athlete, he played three sports all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
Basketball was his thing, but I think if you specialize early, that's when you get a lot of the burnout.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, it's worked out well for him. And if you even this summer when they had about the ESPN, this kid is specializing, using the same muscles all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Your body's going to break down
right,
at some
yeah.
point. So I think spring coaches, at least when I was the baseball coach, I promoted the kids, my players, to play something in the winter, something in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
Just because an athlete that competes learns how to compete. You don't get that by, you know, going to a cage and taking swings. You know, intensity is not a light bulb that you can turn on and off.
Right.
The more you have it on, the better you're going to be.
Yeah, and I think, you touched on this. So 10 years as a born athletic director. And then what you said, 28 as an athletic, just in the athletics, mm-hmm. as well. What about Bourne? Because you're a Fairhaven guy, right? You're
Correct.
Kind of a South Coast guy. So, yep. You know, what stood out about Bourne to you? And, other than what attracted you to this position?
Well,
and to stick it out.
It was kind of like, it's now my home away from home. You look at my my closet, it's just a sea of purple.
Yeah.
But my mentor, Mr. Southworth, he was my basketball coach in high school.
Mm-hmm.
I was like a tag-along third assistant type at Fairhaven High. He said that there was a job opening up in the phys ed department in January. I came, I interviewed, I've been here since.
So, you know, I
used to come to Bourne 3 times a year. Mostly, maybe, in some years, only twice. If we played football away, I'd come once in the winter, once in the spring, once in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
If we were hosting football, then I'd only come in the winter and the spring. Now, it's like going to get a loaf of bread.
Yeah.
Left on North Street, right on 195, right on 25. And
then you're here, right? Yeah. It's a pretty short drive. You know, it's not too bad.
Cruise control.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's nice. You know, you get off the back roads at this point. I'm sure late in the summertime, you don't have to worry, or late in the spring, you don't have to worry about the bridge traffic or anything like that. You get off in Wareham, right?
Yeah, Wareham, or I go under the bridge, and it hasn't always been that way, but now I know all the shortcuts, back roads, etc.
I would hope after 28 years you have a couple of secrets.
I had to pick up a couple of things anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So what's one thing people wouldn't understand that's difficult about being an AD? The average layperson, parent, myself, for example, wouldn't understand or wouldn't know.
Well, I think that the paperwork involved now, even in my 10 years, is much different than it was athletic. Like when Mr. Southworth was here, I remember having schedules like printed out on the paper and made in the AV department, etc. You know, now everything's online. At the state level, even in 10 years, there's a lot more hoops to have to jump through to be able to, you know, have a game in the afternoon. Like, we have a full slate this afternoon. Some people might be under the impression that my job is just to go watch games.
Right.
That's the fun part of my job. You know, the work and preparation leading up to the games, a lot of people probably don't know unless you sit down in the seat.
So what is some of that work? Around 1-2 o'clock or so, you know, because you're also a physical education teacher, mm-hmm. here in the building as well. So when your classes are done and before the games start, you know, how do your days kind of shape out?
I've been down to the football field already. We have to make sure the PA, the lights, all that stuff goes off. One year we opened up and we played the Vineyard. So, no, they had to come over. We had a bank of lights out. A squirrel got in, chewed the wires. You know, we're scrambling. That's not going to get fixed.
Right.
Luckily, our 3 banks lit the field well enough to play. But, I mean, there's always something that comes up unexpected. And if you can't think and work on your feet, this job isn't for you.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah, and I think so something I'm kind of interested in. You mentioned Fairhaven, they're all kind of involved in the South Coast Conference, mm-hmm. The South Coast Conference, small, right? What were the newest teams that were added that made into 2 division? Was it just Somerset-Berkeley?
Somerset-Berkeley, and they're in the blue division.
Right.
With Apponequit, Dighton, Rehoboth, Greater New Bedford Regional, and Old Rochester. And then us was Fairhaven, Bourne, Case, Fairhaven, Seekonk, and Wareham.
Okay.
I have to do an alphabetical.
Well, now I think that has a rich kind of a tradition. For as long as I can remember, Bourne's been a part of the SEC.
Correct.
And it's kind of been that nice 195 stretch, as we were just talking about. You can kind of ride down there and hit all the schools in one kind of clean shot. But obviously, on the other side of the bridge, we have the new formation of the Cape and Islands League.
Correct.
And for, I know people like to argue this with me, but Bourne is a part of Cape Cod, even if you are on the other side of the bridge.
Right.
Were you approached at all about joining the Cape and Islands League?
5 years ago, when it started in the infancy of it, was John Muldoon was at PJP, and he called and asked, and I said, "Jeepers, John, I said, we're in a spot. We've been in the South Coast Conference since the inception of the league. And it really fits us both academically, athletically. The schools we're playing are, pretty high caliber. The travel really isn't so bad. I mean, sometimes you could try to go get to a ball game down Cape, and it takes longer than to go to Dighton.
Right.
Just with the traffic, et cetera. Sure, yeah. So I believe it was Upper Cape stayed in the MAC, the Mayflower League. Mashpee stayed in the South Shore League.
Right, yeah.
And we stayed in ours. It's just probably a comfort level and the fear of the unknown of how it was going to work out.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, and I think, what would you might lose, I'm sure you would still be able to schedule games with Wareham, but you have that rich rivalry. I think back to football in particular. But,
right.
You have that twice a year Thanksgiving Day or twice in home-and-home series with Wareham, and that's obviously in the small division of the South Coast Conference now. And, you would hate to see some of those good rivalries. I think of the good Bourne basketball teams going up against Steve Carvalho and ORR, or who am I thinking of? Jim Carpaccio or Cabuccio, at Aponequid.
Yeah, we've had, and it's kind of funny. Like Wareham is the rival Thanksgiving Day and geographical location, but each sport kind of has a built-in rivalry with other schools within the league. Like for us, in boys basketball, Aponequid, OR, those are pretty big rivalries for
right.
us. And to leave that situation and not know where it was, because when I was asked, we've gone through 5 years. Cape and Islands League this year is going to now come to fruition. That's kind of a long time to be in limbo,
right?
Where you're going to be. So,
yeah, and I think
I'm happy with where we are.
Well, yeah, and you mentioned the rivalries within the different sports. I mean, I think of volleyball. You have Case, you have Greater New Bedford, you have Fairhaven, all right in there, all kind of rich volleyball programs in themselves, and you get those great home-and-home series. And how often have you seen Bourne and Case end up in the playoffs, squaring off in the South Sectional Finals or something like that?
Yeah, and Fairhaven is in the mix with that in volleyball.
Right, yeah.
It's for us, when you look at the overall, the big picture and all the sports that we offer, I think our best fit is in the South Coast Conference.
Now, I'm throwing you a little bit of a curveball. I didn't let you know about this question here, but I've been doing an ongoing series on post-188 baseball and their kind of revival that it's gone through over the last 4 years under head coach Brian Tomasini. And one of the things in talking to multiple people, interview for the story, was the coordination and the appreciation of high schools for post-188 and what that can do for their baseball players. And obviously, you were a baseball coach for a long time.
I had many kids that played for Coach C.
Right, yeah, yeah. So Bob Crotty was one of the, I feel like, is like the godfather of baseball in Cape Cod.
He's been around forever.
Right. But, what benefits do you see from an American Legion maybe over different summer leagues that are available to high school kids?
Well, I think, personally, the Legion tries to mimic the high school schedule better than, you go to AAU. So if you play on an AAU team and you play just on the weekends and you're playing four ball games in 2 days, how many people are actually looking out for kids? Pitches, how many pitches they're throwing,
right.
Are they going to pitch the next day? Where the Legion has it built in. I think the Legion went to the pitch counts before the high school actually did.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, so I think It's just, I know when I played, there wasn't as much AAU club stuff.
Right, sure.
But all our goal was, you know, we're going to play for, you know, Fave and the Cushion of Legion. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where we wanted to go. And that's starting to come back again, I think.
Yeah, and I think you see, I mean, when you look around with the success back-to-back division, 10, District 10 titles, and I even think back to, what, the early 2000s or so under Coach Karate, and they have the Steve Cishek's, the Jason Smiths of the world, mm-hmm. you know, the Johnny Muses of the world, you know, all those guys that went on and had, you know, pretty promising careers. You know, I think that kind of carries a little bit of clout, and I could see that growing up, and they'd be like, well, I want to be the next Jason Smith or the sure. next, you know, Steve Cishek.
He's still pitching.
Yeah, yeah. I think he's in the Cubs now. Yeah. Yeah, he's made some good money.
Sure.
Okay, so now this is what I'm really interested in here. So you're also moonlight as a referee for high school football.
Yes.
And, of course, we have the new introduction of the federation rules. I believe Massachusetts is the second to last state in the United States.
Yeah, Texas is
right,
the only
one that's not adopted to it.
Right.
You know, you hear a lot of hoopla, maybe, for lack of a better term here, about too many rules coming too quickly, too fast. You know, are referees going to be able to communicate everything, get everything up to speed? Are the coaches going to be able to communicate everything that the referees are expecting to their kids in this short amount of time? I think you're kind of in a unique position as an athletic director and also as a referee. What's your take on the new adoption of the NFHS rules?
First, change is difficult.
Sure.
Whether it's referees, coaches, the kids, change is always hard. But I think what the football boards, what Mr. Murphy's done in the Cape and Islands area, mm-hmm. and what Mr. Ashley's done in the 195 belt, at least on this end of the state, I think the coaches as well as referees are as prepared as they can be going into a whole new rule set for a season. I know that there's been many meetings where state interpreters, Mr. Riccio from Connecticut, has come and spoke to mm-hmm. groups of officials, coaches together of what the differences are. And I think the thing that we don't want to lose sight of is it's a different rule set, but it's still football.
Right.
The game of football, it's not going to look totally different than something you haven't seen before. Some of the rules, obviously there's a bunch of differences within the rules, but I think the preparation that's gone in, a lot of people have done tireless work mm-hmm. in trying to get as many people educated as possible. I know on my board, the SMFOA, we're fortunate enough to have the state interpreter as a member of our board.
Okay, yeah.
So when we have meetings on Wednesday night, we're getting firsthand what the rest of the state, he's the go-to guy for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's, we'll see after week one, how it goes, but I know all the feedback we've gotten, at least for me on both fronts as an athletic director and an official, all the scrimmages have been pretty smooth.
Mm-hmm.
Now we'll have to see, you know, games when the intensity comes up a little bit or a lot of bit.
Right.
We're going to see how, you know, we're going to see how we get through this. But I would think by next season, people are going to forget that we even played by NCAA rules.
Right,
the buzz is going to be over, and football as we know it in Massachusetts is just going to be by federation rules.
Yeah, and I think one thing that kind of jumped out to me was, you know, you have so many coaches or so many referees and officials who not only officiate high school games, but also the college game. And that was my concern, is that, you know, where you still have to know the NCAA rules that you were playing under a year ago, But you also have the federation rules now at the high school level, and there's that kind of back and forth there. But and speaking to you earlier this week at one of the games, something I didn't realize is that you can also be officiate Rhode Island or New Hampshire or Connecticut, depending on where you are in the state,
right.
New York maybe if you're on the western part of the state, where these rules are already in place. So for the referees or officials, you may already be familiar with these rule changes anyway.
Well, we were doing the state of Rhode Island, our board, a couple of years ago. So I think I have, I was looking back at, I don't know why, but I was looking back at some old game cards. I think I've done 24 games, probably two seasons worth of games in Rhode Island under federation rules already. Some other parts of the state, maybe not as much. I do know that there's been some college officials that are not going to officiate high school games anymore because there's a lot at stake for them personally, where you can't make a mistake on a Saturday, where some people, that's their job.
Right, right.
You know, that's kind of, they're an official. And we have a lot of Division I officials in the state of Massachusetts. You know, I don't think you want to make a mistake at Florida State.
No.
ACC or something, right. You know, because you're thinking that, oh, wait a minute, it's not Friday night, it's Saturday now.
You got 100,000 people in the stands, yeah, a couple million watching at home. Right. Yeah, yeah.
I think it's going to be, the transition thus far has been smooth, and now we have a season to see, you know, how smooth it really is going to be.
Yeah,
now, I know on the officials end, Wes, we've done study groups, meetings, interpretation meetings, mechanics meetings. I mean, we're as prepared as we're going to be, I believe.
Yeah, and I think even I wrote a story last week on some of the major changes in the NFHS rules and everything, and I was going over the MIAA website. They had a great kind of PowerPoint presentation that was available, kind of PDF form, and I was just kind of blown away at all the video chop and breakdowns that they did and explanations of everything, and even that just available for public consumption if you go on the MIAA website.
Right.
But I found that very enlightening, and I'm sure that is just kind of scratching the surface of what it's expected of the officials to go through and all their training courses and everything. But I was at a scrimmage yesterday between Sandwich and Abington, and you know, you see a couple officials there, you know, three officials there, and the amount of time that they took to explain things to both sides of you know, either team, saying, hey, you can't do this, or we're not trying to, you know, be harsher on you or, you know, more lenient on another team, but this is what's going to be expected of you, and this is what we're going to have to call, you know, so we're telling you now. So
right.
I thought the communication level between the referees and the teams and the players was pretty high, which I think is a sign of a good referee anyway.
Yeah, and especially where it's all new, you know, there's points of emphasis that everybody's looking in. I don't know if I agree 100% that the NFHS rules are safer than the NCAA. There's some things in there that, to me, a wedge on a kickoff doesn't seem safe to me, where it's not allowed in the NCAA. But the safety of our kids, whether at me as an official or an athletic director, is kind of paramount to what we're doing.
Sure, yeah.
And you know, just no blocking below the waist or immediate at the snap while the ball's in the zone. I think that's going to take away from a lot of the nicks and the knees, et cetera. But one thing that was brought up to me on numerous occasions is kids playing at the next level. And my retort was, Florida's been in the NFHS forever. You're going to tell me that all those, I mean, a lot of people recruit just in the state of Florida.
Yeah, sure. How many Division I athletes come out
of there?
You know
what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
so anything, yeah.
It's not hampering them at the next level. Why is it going to hamper our kids? So, again, it's all perception, and we'll see how, we'll see where it goes. Why Texas hasn't adopted like the rest of, I don't know. Why Massachusetts was one of the last ones, I don't have an answer for that. But it makes sense. Basketball, every state's a Federation rules thing.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
right.
You know, baseball, we've held out forever. Major League Baseball rules, half that book doesn't even exist in high school. You know,
right.
So
yeah.
I think we're going in the right direction.
Well, I think if one thing holds true about the state of Massachusetts is that across the board, generally speaking, they're usually dragging their feet to make any sort of change, right?
That I don't know.
I think about the Prohibition era and everything,
well,
right?
Yeah,
there
if
one
you look
of the
back
last,
in history, yeah. I maybe.
So you mentioned points of emphasis. As a referee, what are some points of emphasis this year that
blindside blocks.
Yep.
And we're not taking the game, you know, those hits, those blocks that spring mm-hmm. runners for the big runs. But I think we made it safer. Because now if you have your hands extended and you're not leading with a shoulder, et cetera, you're still going to be able to make the block.
Right.
You might not see the ESPN highlight film.
Jacked up, right.
But who cares? I think the end goal of getting the ball in the end zone, whether we're blocking with our hands out or laying somebody out, the ball's still going to go in the end zone.
Right.
You know, so I think that point of emphasis, I think that's good for our game.
And that was something that was like really the first rule that I kind of looked at and wanted to do a deeper dive on, because that, of course, comes into play with targeting. I think
right.
often those two type of plays kind of go hand in hand.
But
again, the helmet-to-helmet contacts, those are on for those blindside blocks. I think on loose ball plays, football plays, as they're mm-hmm. described, or a judgment call on a referee if – you know, head gets moved or something like that in the last second, and it becomes incidental contact. I think the benefit of the doubt is there. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, benefit of the doubt. But if you come with the crown,
mm-hmm.
you're just looking for problems. And number one, and it's not a safe thing for the person that's initiating the contact.
Right.
Never mind the recipient. You know, it's just not a safe. It's not a safe football play anymore.
And I
know
think
that it never was.
Right. But it's
now
just
it's
not,
accepted
yeah. right.
as not a safe football play.
Yeah. And I think some of the – you look for context clues in those type of situations, right? If a player is loading or launching himself mm-hmm. or doing that upward thrust beforehand, coming up to the shoulder or head area, right? Cause
you working
even
this
if,
weekend somewhere?
I could, right?
I think,
you want
yeah,
me to?
Yeah.
Right. I've done my research.
Yeah.
I know a thing or two.
Yeah.
But those are some of the things, right? So, and I think even if you have if it's a shoulder to helmet contact, that can
any
even
forcible
be...
contact above the shoulder
mm-hmm.
can be a foul for targeting.
Okay, and so, as far as the
it could be a forearm,
right? Okay,
anything to the head neck area.
Now, does it have to be clear and obvious to warrant a flagrant flat foul, which would lead to an ejection if you get the two
targeting? Sticks out like a sore thumb.
Mm-hmm.
There's really not a, well, was it, wasn't it? Like, if you have a clear targeting foul, you know it, I know it. Basically, the whole, everybody watching can see that.
Now, if that were to occur at any point in the game, obviously you're ejected. Is there any further penalties after that, maybe for the following game or anything?
In the NCAA book, it was... you're out for a year. So if it was if it happened in the first half, you're out for the second half, and
mm-hmm.
the first half of the night. There's much MIA. It's just like any. If you get thrown out of a soccer game,
okay,
you'll be out for the next week.
Okay. Yeah. So okay. So that's something to keep in mind. And the other thing,
the thing we you have to be sure,
right?
Because there's a lot at stake for that kid that's committing that foul.
Right. Yeah. 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 Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, obviously, if a kid were to get ejected in the final seconds of a fourth quarter game, you know, what does that mean to him in that game, right?
Right.
You know, so like,
yeah,
there would be
something
else
yeah.
after that. Something that I saw the referees talking about a lot at the scrimmage I attended yesterday was uniform violations. All equipment has to be in. You can't have your shoulder pads exposed. You know, so
that's a safety thing, and that's. NCAA had the same
mm-hmm.
the same type of, but I think with now going to the federal, that's something we can nip right away. You know, instead of chain, well, it's halfway. There's no gray area now. It's beautiful. You cover your stuff, or go out on the sideline and come back when it's covered.
Mm-hmm.
And kids really don't like going out, especially for equipment stuff.
No, and I'm sure, if a coach gets flagged or something like that, a team gets flagged, that's the last thing the coaches want. Yeah. So I'm sure they're going to hear about it one way or the other when they come back to the sideline.
For sure.
Speaking of the sidelines, the width of now from the hash marks to the sideline is shortened, I think, from 60 feet now to 53 feet, kind of making it into three equal portions width-wise.
It's, 17 and change sideline to the hash mark.
Mm-hmm. Yards, yeah.
Yeah, and if you When you said you went down with the draw, I said, "Did you see anything different?"
Yeah,
that's what I was getting at.
Right.
There's a ball on either hash. There's a distinct short side of the field and long side of the field. To me, you go in the 2-minute drill. You run to the boundary. You can get out of bounds quick.
Mm-hmm.
If you got to get back deck and scoop, and you got it on the hash, there's a lot of room for him to scoop.
A lot of sweeps that way. Yeah, the far side.
Sweep the field, toss. Sweep the field, toss the boundary.
Right.
I think a lot of strategy now can go in.
Yeah.
With that,
Well, and I think that kind of goes part and parcel with the new timeout rules, too. Because now we go down from, 3 20-second timeouts to full timeouts to just –
Three
full 1-minute timeouts now, right?
Three fulls, 12-minute quarters, three fulls each half.
Mm-hmm. So I think now when you talk about strategy, you only have one timeout left. You want to save that for as long as you can, kind of keep in the back pocket. You're probably going to be running to that short side of the field more often than not.
Try to get out of bounds and make the clock be your friend, sure.
Right. Now, the other thing you mentioned that I think has probably raised the most eyebrows with the rule change has been the 12-minute quarters and the effect that has on, that may not affect the Everetts of the world, the King Phillips of the world.
That affects the Bourne High School of
right.
the world.
Right, yeah, exactly.
I mean, basically, you're playing one more quarter
mm-hmm.
in the game. The however, doing Dartmouth High School, true story, Dartmouth High School on Friday night and then go to Burrillville on Saturday morning. Both games took the exact same time
right.
on the watch.
No kidding.
How that works, I don't know, but it did.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, listen, I'm not sure if, we're talking about the same pace of play issues as we are about baseball, Major League Baseball, and those type of issues. I'm not sure if we're exactly there yet, although it is getting kind of painstakingly slow to watch an NFL game. I think that's more about the commercials and everything else. But
especially when you're there.
Yeah.
Like you're at the game and all of a sudden
you don't know what's going on.
You're in the huddle right? forever. And then they come back. And
yeah, exactly. Yeah, my biggest thing is you score a touchdown, go to commercial. You kick an extra point, commercial.
Right.
Touchback, commercial. Three and out, commercial. Yeah, mm-hmm. and you don't even see anything. You got two or three minutes of gameplay there.
Right.
I think that just about wraps up all my questions here, but I'd like to close every interview I have here with five questions that have nothing to do with sports. So I'd like to give you a little bit of a heads up on the important questions, I'll say. Mm-hmm. But these I like to kind of do on a surprise basis here. So question number one, do you prefer hot, humid weather or the frigid cold?
Hot, humid.
Yeah, why is that?
Cause I'm a baby. I don't like being cold.
No, I see. I agree. I'd rather sweat than have to bundle up and worry about frostbite and everything like that. Because people say, well, if you're cold, you can just put on more layers. But if you're cold to the core, we've been at Gallo.
It's awful. I'm a shorts guy, 365 days a year.
Yeah.
Sometimes it gets a little. As I've gotten older, I've kind of had to sweatpants into the building and shorts.
Yeah.
When I go into class, but.
Okay, so what is this is a little bit of a sport question. What's the highest, of course, as you moonlight as a referee, you also moonlight as a wrestler as mm-hmm. well. So I appreciate being able to tag along last winter at one of your events here. But what is the highest profile wrestling match you've been a part of?
I was Thompson Speedway, EPW Tag Team Championship, which doesn't mean a whole lot, but there was about 6,000 people there.
Okay.
So that was probably the biggest crowd I was in front of.
Did you win?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, we did.
So what's that like when you go through the crowd there? And
what was really cool was we went into the ring in like the speed car.
Oh, yeah.
And when we left, we did a lap around the whole place with the belts on. It was kind of fun.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. That's really cool. What's your favorite restaurant in the area?
Mike's Restaurant, Fayetteville.
Oh, okay. So where is that? Where is that? Where
right on Route 6.
What do you get? What's your go-to meal there?
Closed shave prime rib sandwich.
Oh, okay. So not an open face? Is that what you mean? Like yeah, you want the actual, like, on top? Bun, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. All right. I like that. I'll have to put that on my list there.
For sure.
What is your biggest pet peeve?
The rumor mill.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. A lot of people just ask me. I don't know if I have all the information, but I got a pretty good handle on things. You know, let's not talk about missing deadlines and et cetera. And so one team, we're not gonna have a team.
Yeah.
Because oftentimes that's not the case.
Okay. All right. And lastly, what is the first thing you buy if you hit the lottery? This is a good one.
No, I got it. Because I don't know how to, like a sports complex.
Yeah.
If I hit the lottery, I'd have one of those, six basketball courts, a baseball field, the cages.
Indoor, yeah.
Yeah, because up here, we're up against it. You know, I think they were trying to build something down Cape.
And highest. Mike Sherman was involved in that, yeah. I heard. Yeah.
That would be up for sure. I'd run AAU tournaments. I'd have that thing going 24/7.
You know, it's funny you mention that because I've said that to my fiance for years. So you know the I think it's the Hankook tire place on Cranberry Highway, like across from the old Benny's.
Mm-hmm.
That huge blue like warehouse that they just put in there. I always said I thought that area would be like ripe for an athletic complex. Yep. You get a hockey rink in there, you get an indoor track so you guys don't have to go down to Greater New Bedford the time, or Sandwich doesn't have to go up to Boston every week for a meet.
Yep.
You know, and then you get the basket, you get indoor, outdoor baseball, you know, all that stuff. And that just seems like an easy cash cow.
Right. And when you go, like when you're going, Hanover has one. As you're going north towards Boston, mm-hmm. there's Dana Barros has one. It's all glass. It's gorgeous. But down in our area, there's really nothing like that.
Yeah.
You know, and I think instead of having all our kids in multiple sports traveling, it'd be nice to have people travel to us.
Yeah.
You know.
Absolutely. I love that. All right. So I know I said five questions. That'll be it. But I'm going to put you on the spot here a little bit. Can you cut me your best wrestling promo or a wrestling promo right now?
Sure.
Oh, I love it. This would be great.
You pencil neck geek, Wes. If you want some, come get some. This is the sweet one talking.
I like that. That's good. That's good stuff right there. I felt it. I almost like jumped back in my seat a little bit there. Well, Scott, thank you very much. I appreciate you taking the time out here. I'll be catching up with you later at the Bourne Upper Cape football game, first game of the year. It's at Jackson Field, 6:30, 5 o'clock, or Friday, 6:30, Jackson Field. Let me get that. Now, that's not getting changed at all with the weather and Dorian and everything. That's
no,
still,
but
we
should be good to go. I got soccer going off at 3:45. Field hockey, girls soccer, and volleyball are all at Aponequip, and we're trying to get all systems go on a Friday afternoon.
I love it. That sounds great. Enjoy the weekend. Thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.